outrageous combos. We gon' show you how the world goes. AG's combos. We gon' show you how the world goes. AG's combos. We gon' show you how the world goes.
Take a look at the world we living in, it's falling apart. Put the glass, muscle, and guns, but don't show hard. Time to spark a conversation, let that be a lesson. Speak the truth in the booth, call it confession. Chains of oppression links us together. Any stormy weather, red, blue, black, or white, we can do better. It's AG combos, pay attention. Make links, break chains, yeah, that's the mission. I said, yeah, that's the mission.
AG's combos. Show you how the world goes. AG's combos. We gon' show you how the world goes.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to AG's Convos. It is me, AG, back in the PCB studio with Mr. Kenny Smith.
What up, dope?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Man, I'm straight, bro. We working, man. That's all I can do is work, man. I'm working.
Yeah, I could tell. You be hit or miss during the week.
Yeah, I'm...
Ghost. Incognito.
My week is not planned, so, like... Stuff would just come up on me, and then I'd be like, oh, all right, I'll do it.
All right.
And then I end up doing some shit. But that's just how my life is. Tia try to tell me that I'm kind of everywhere with it.
Right.
Because she's more, like, into, like...
Schedules.
Structure.
And, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, she always asks me, like, what are you doing? What you got planned for tomorrow? What you doing this weekend?
Right.
And I'd be like, I don't know. But Saturday come up, and somebody called me, I'd be like, oh, I'm going.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Spur of the moment kind of stuff. I got you.
That's how I really live. And then if don't nobody call me, then I might just be sitting at home the whole day. Or I might go exercise or just do some me time type things. You know what I'm saying? Like something.
That's good, man. Give yourself some personal time. Yeah. That's good. Well, that's good to hear, man. You have a good week, though? Everything all right?
Everything good, man. Other than, you know what I'm saying, work kind of more stressful. You know what I'm saying? Because they're starting this new system at our job where it's like a whole new company coming in and taking over the computer system.
Mm.
So everybody has to learn how to do things differently,
right?
From the doctors to the everybody, basically.
Gotcha.
Even the schedulers, because I schedule appointments, so everything is different.
Right.
And with that being different, you know what I'm saying, people are stressing out more.
Mm.
People who I work for are stressing out more. So that means they're stressing me out more just because they're stressing out. So it's kind of hectic, but I'm handling it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I hit everything. They be like, dang, you do it all. I'm like, yeah, I can do it. But y'all don't know how stressful this shit is. And then we coming straight off a pandemic where we wasn't doing anything for a long time. Like, we was just sitting.
By the book, yeah.
I was literally just, that's one of the reasons why the podcast even became a thing is because I wasn't at work really doing nothing. So I can put my all into all these podcasts and do all these things. Because at work, I'm just sitting there and just sitting at a computer and just ain't doing nothing.
Lollygagging.
Yeah. But now it's like, no, you're going to work.
All right.
You got to work now.
Something got to take a back seat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's interesting times, man. You know, you talk about stress at work. I feel like work for me is getting a little less stressful.
I mean,
maybe it's because I ate before I came. That helps.
You ain't hangry.
I'm sorry
today.
About last week, y'all. That was a bad week. I don't know if anybody listened. I mean, I know people listen to it. I can kind of see the numbers, but
yeah.
Man, I was in a place last week, dude. And
yeah.
The fact that I was hungry just did not help.
Yeah, I got it.
I actually listened back to it like,
I seen when you posted, you was like, sorry for being hangry. I'm just sorry. Guys. It was one of them things where I was just venting the whole time. Like, fuck it.
Yeah, it was an interesting week, but you know, I've come to realize that with so much momentum in the building now, and so many things kind of starting to happen organically and systematically, it's not as stressful as it used to be. I can start getting creative again.
Yeah, you getting back into your bag of what you really
what
do.
What I do, yeah, which I haven't really been able to do since I moved into the building because it's been all like, oh crap, how do we make this
work? How do you do this? But everything is coming together. I kind of, with any time you put hard work into something, the beginning, the hard work is what's going to stress you out. And then all of a sudden, when it all comes together, you like, you can kind of breathe a little bit. It's still stressful.
It's coming together. It ain't there yet, but yeah. You'll know when it's together because I'll be talking about going to the gym.
Right.
That's when you'll know.
Yeah.
That's when you'll know I got some free time on my hands. When I'm doing just my job and only my job.
Yeah.
Man, it might be a while still, but you know, it feels a lot better to have all these other functioning parts and pieces within the building. And it don't mean that everything is going according to plan yet.
Yeah.
But there's you know, I said it a while ago, there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
We started to see that light when things started to turn around, and then that light got brighter when people started to get more involved. And now it's like, okay, we're almost out of this tunnel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a really good feeling.
Yeah, that foundation is definitely going to be very, very strong when it's all said and done.
That's the beautiful part about it. Because I spent the time ensuring that the foundation was stable.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had this conversation with somebody else that I work with that I do some coaching and consulting for. They're like, man, you could have done this first or you could have done that first. And of course I could. And for the business model that they're working on, it's a little more, you know, relevant to that kind of process because it's a one person operation,
mm-hmm.
you know, almost like a barber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a barber needs his equipment. He needs his chair. He needs his building. And he needs a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of turn the lights on and go. It's a little different when you've got all of these other parts and pieces.
Yeah.
You know, so for them, I could very easily say, just set up a chair in the middle of nowhere and go to work and see what happens. You know, you got barbers now on TikTok literally setting up shop in parking lots.
Yeah.
And getting notoriety.
Yeah.
I can't do that with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, so when they see what I'm doing, it's like, dude, you could have been so much further ahead had you just been a little more aggressive about going out. But it's like, yeah, but then I wouldn't have been as attractive or as prepared for what's to come.
Yeah, and what we were preparing for was, I would think we were preparing for like high-end clientele mm-hmm. and not really just anybody. And putting out a good product for everybody. You know what I'm saying? So,
and that takes some effort.
And that takes a lot of time and effort, even to build the team to even try to get that done. You
exactly.
know what I'm saying? So,
there was a lot of trial and error. There was a lot of, you know, starts and stops, rises and falls. But now it's kind of starting to, you know, plateau a little bit and gradually climb. So,
I love it.
It feels good.
I love to see it. You know what I'm saying? I feel your pain. When you feel pain, I feel it. I'll be like, dang, man, I don't, how are we going to figure this out? But at the end of the day, I see the direction. So it's like, oh, my God, this is becoming a beautiful thing.
Right. So it's favorable, you know, but it's got me analyzing what I am actually doing. Because now it's like, okay, you're at that point. So let's take your product and make it marketable again.
Mm-hmm.
So now I got to stop and think about, okay, so what have I really done over the last 12, 13, 14 months? And it's like, all right, I did the podcast. I put a lot of time and effort into that. I put a lot of time and effort into the building. The building is suited. It's ready to go. The podcast, it is what I made it up to this point.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really reflect what I was trying to do with it, like it used to.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody kind of pointed that out to me. It's like, you know, they asked the question, like, does your podcast really still speak for your businesses? Because it sounds more like a conversation with you and people you're close to or you and people you can kind of relate to. But I don't feel as connected to the business part of it anymore.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, you're right. I haven't really spent a lot of time doing that. Not that I'm not professional in these discussions, but the marketing of the businesses kind of took a back seat because I couldn't really sell what I wasn't ready to actually provide.
Provide, right, exactly.
So it was a little different. It's like I can't go out and start talking about how great coaching is and how we can do this kind of stuff with the studio when the studio wasn't ready. And if I was to coach you, I would do it in this messy office or I would have to do it. You know what I mean? So now that we're getting back to that point, I'm starting to consider, you know, the direction of the podcast. But I kind of like what we're doing.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, there's a familiarity for the listeners. There's an energy that comes with the personal side of it. There's an entertainment value above and beyond an education value. So I'm wondering, like, do I add another show or at least another segment to the show that's exclusive to one or the other, business or personal life? So I've got a little negotiating I got to do with myself.
You know what I mean? You got to speak, you got to listen to your listeners. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And if they're listening and they got a vibe from the beginning and it's starting to take a turn for them to the point where they don't want to listen anymore.
Well, it's not, it's, I never got a sense of, you know, you're losing your crowd.
Yeah.
It was more like, how do we get, how do we stay informed with where the business, how we can participate on the business side of the business.
Because it was like how you were going to get everybody to interact with everybody.
Yeah, and they were really engaged in that. But I kept saying, you got to wait, you got to wait, you got to wait. And then I just stopped talking about it.
And now it's like, all right, is the wait over?
Right, and that's it. You keep saying the building is coming along. Can we get back? So it's a good position to be in. And I think a big part of it is the fact that, you know, Alonzo and the Links Not Changed piece, it didn't take a back seat by any means.
Yeah.
It just hasn't been as visible as it was
we were strong,
in the very beginning.
We were strong with it at the beginning because it was very, very, it was giving people an inside look on a place where they don't know nothing about. You know what I'm saying? Like, and also inspiring because Links Not Changed led to us talking to a lot of dope people who got out of jail and changed their lives. You know what I'm saying?
So, and it still does. You know, we talked to Alfred Cleveland. Yeah. We've talked to a lot of people that have still been involved, Wall Street West, that have still been involved with that population, but we didn't keep the engagement part going.
Yeah.
But again, there was, you know, we got the 501c3 and then things really kind of changed. So it's like, okay, there's a lot more eyes on you now. There's a lot more liability that you have to be conscious of. So it's like, all right, let me make sure I do this right. And this is where I become a little more conservative than liberal with my information.
When it was just
an idea.
It was like, I could just talk about whatever.
Right.
But then when you made it kind of a reality, it was like, all right, now
it's
I got to move different.
There's an accountability element to it that I got to be conscious of every time I open my mouth.
Because you got board members and everything, so it's all types of crazy stuff that's going on.
Exactly. And not only that, but when I start asking people to contribute and donate, and then their point of reference is a podcast, and the podcast doesn't really, you know what I mean? It's got to be specific. It's got to speak to the mission. So I'm aware of that. Just so y'all know, I'm listening.
Yeah,
I take heed to every bit of information that come my way.
I'm glad you're getting feedback, though, because most people don't even get feedback. So if you get feedback, that means people are listening.
Yeah. You know, and things have expanded quite a bit, man. You know, in the last couple of weeks, you know, we've been picked up by iHeartRadio.
Oh, wow.
Pandora. A lot of different platforms. Alexa TuneIn, which I didn't even realize was a thing. You know, in addition to Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Google Cast and all of that. So there's like, I don't know, like 20, 25 streaming platforms we're accessible on now.
Yeah.
But it's bringing a realization to me about how diverse and how broad this podcast and environment is.
Yeah, yeah.
As big as we knew it to be, that's on the grand scale. On the subscale, it's like the underground podcast space. It exists.
It exists heavy.
It's just as big, if not bigger, than the public platform. Yeah, the public. So,
yeah. And I think we were so gung-ho on Spotify because when we did start, you had the big deal with Rogan. Mm-hmm. And you had all these things. So you're like, ooh, if he's on that channel, when he's on that space, it got to be a lot of podcast listeners on there because he's getting most of his money from there.
Right.
But you don't think about, like, a lot of people don't have Spotify or a lot of people don't have these different platforms and they listen to podcasts in a different space. That's just I was on my, I think it was my Instagram, and I follow a few people who are actors. You know what I'm saying? They're local Cleveland actors.
Mm-hmm.
And they have movies out. But though you will never see those movies unless you go on Tubi.
Right.
because Tubi is where independent actors go and post their movies.
Their films, right.
So it's kind of crazy. Like, if you don't go there, you will never get that. But if you go there, it's a whole nother realm of TV that you've never seen.
And it's interesting, you know, it's funny you say that because I've been thinking about how diverse the entertainment field has become. Podcast being the audio version of that. But on the video side, it's probably even more significant. Yeah. You know, I remember the first time I saw Peacock and I didn't think anything of it.
Nothing.
It's like, oh, another channel pops up. You know, Peacock. I don't know. There's like 30-40 of these apps that just pop up on the Fire Stick.
And they're free TV.
And it's free TV. Mm-hmm. Tubi is another one.
Yeah.
Freevee is another one. Mm-hmm. Freebie or whatever it's called. Yeah. But when you start seeing that they're sponsoring like NFL events and college bowl games and like, you know, music events like the AMAs or the Country Music Awards or whatever, and it's like, how did they get that
sponsorship?
Exactly. And then their names are on like venues, like the Peacock, you know, stadium or whatever. You know, we always saw like the PepsiCo and this bowl or this arena and that arena, Gillette Stadium. But all of a sudden it's like, oh, Amazon and Nike. You know what I mean? All these companies are really getting that kind of money and that they're already... They're willing to pay that
kind of... People are listening, though, to those platforms, though. They're on those platforms more than they're on the big ones. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like...
It's easier to get on.
The big ones is all watered down. I need to go somewhere where I can get something where don't nobody know about it, and I can kind of get some people hip to something. Like,
get in on the ground floor.
Yeah, like, ooh, you ain't seen that?
Right.
Or you ain't listened to that.
You wasn't aware, right.
Like, that's a good show. Even though it's not on the big platform, you need to go listen to that.
Exactly. And that's kind of the direction that the business is going to go in. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a podcast environment. There's an art platform, if you will, for audio engineering and for the music business and all of these things. But it's so saturated with so many different participants. Yeah. It's like, how do you stand out? You know, we stand out in Ohio because our studio is very unique in what it brings to the table, where it's at, how it operates, the equipment that it has, the people working for it, and the supplemental services that come along with it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just look up recording studios, it's one of a bunch of different ones that come up. So you got to position yourself different. So that is going to be the push for the next 6 to 9 months.
Mm.
Solidifying that distinction between this facility and the rest of them that are out there. And we've got a very good game plan for doing that. So I feel like I can get back to work now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm kind of excited about that.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I'm in the PCB studio.
Yeah, we here, man. I mean, that was one of the reasons why I didn't want to uproot this, because I was like, dude, we need a backup.
Mm-hmm.
A backup to the real thing. You know what I'm saying? So it provides that home feeling like,
sure.
I just went home for a minute. But you know what I'm saying? When we get in the big studio, I'm like a kid in the candy store when I get to the big studio. Like, I'm just there and I'm like, oh my God, this is just surreal. Like, the space, you know what I'm saying, that you have, the quality of sound that comes out of there. Everything is just totally different at the big studio.
Right.
I pub the big studio to whoever comes down here all the time. Like, listen, if you want to book at a real studio, you need to book at the big studio.
Right.
And every time you got people who got their price range, like, I don't think I can afford it. And you don't even know if you can afford it because I never told you a price.
Right.
I just said, I got a website you can go to. You can book a studio session. Never said a price to you, but you think just because I said big studio, I'm about to charge you a whole bunch of money.
Right.
But if you're investing in yourself and you want good quality, why wouldn't you want to go to the big studio?
You know, we've had this conversation internally, like, you know, how is it so easy for people to spend $1,000 on a pair of shoes?
Yeah.
But not spend, you know, $100 on the quality of their product.
On the quality product.
Of their product. This is your product.
Something that could potentially make you some money.
Right.
Them shoes ain't going to do nothing. People going to look at you and say, oh, he got those. They might even say, I got those too.
Right. So I know how much you spent on that. I listen to your music and it's like, dude, where are these like track audio, these YouTube sounds coming from? Wow. Why do you have AI voices in your backup singers?
All of that
goofiness. It's like for a little bit more money, or maybe even a lot more money.
And that also doesn't make people in the industry take you serious.
Exactly.
Even though it might be a dope song. I got a lot of artists that I know that are dope artists. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to actually getting to the next level of their game, when you go, if somebody heard that song, I didn't have it in my young career where somebody heard one of my songs and was like, oh, the first thing they asked me, who made the beat?
Right.
And if I say YouTube, I just YouTubed it. They instantly don't take you serious no more.
Right.
I don't give a fuck how good that song is because exactly. They know that they can't make money off that if it's a YouTube beat.
Like, right,
because
anybody could be using that
heard beat. That, it's been on YouTube. The whole thing is being exclusive with music. Nobody, my boy made the beat. I made the music. It's me. Everything is me. That's when the one dude, when Nefertiti and her husband.
Yeah, Pete Jones, yeah.
They are the epitome of what a real artist do. That's why he's in with so many, because he makes everything.
Right.
So they take him so serious, like, and who did that? Right.
And we have those parts and pieces.
Yeah.
And we're not the only place that has them.
Yeah, you ain't the
but
only
we're
place.
The we're the one of the few places that are packaging it in a way that makes it real easy for an artist to say, okay, I could do that.
And you
know what I mean? or business.
You might get that exposure that you want just by being in the studio space. That you're in because of the people that you're around. Like they hear the song and then say you heard the song and you be like, that's a dope song. I got somebody I want you to meet.
Right.
That well, quick, it I just it. Went from yeah. one space to another space.
Right.
Just like that.
And that's it.
But if you go to somebody's basement and make the song, and it's a dope song, and it's made on YouTube, and somebody else heard, and you ain't going to really meet nobody but the engineer, and the only thing he going to say is, that's dope.
Right.
That's all I can give you. That's dope.
And for the listening audience, you know, I know this probably sounds like a conversation between me and Ken.
Oh, yeah.
There are elements of this conversation that I really hope you pay attention to as it relates to what we're trying to accomplish. Yeah. And some of the stuff you've heard before, we got to be different. We got to stand out. We got to offer something that isn't, you know, readily available in the market. We got to piece multiple segments and multiple parts of what the industry need together so that we can give the whole package. That's always been the move since day one. Mm-hmm. But the execution of that is much more complex than you might think because so many people have become so accustomed to less than. They've become so tolerable of good enough. You know what I mean? And that's not just in the music world. Mm-hmm. That's in the commercial world. That's anywhere. In the world of, you know, high-end, significantly sized organizations. You look at it and go, really? That's how you're handling this? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? COVID didn't help.
No.
You know, it stuck a lot of people in rooms. It took a lot of the creativity out of the equation. And it stopped people from sitting in front of the person that was helping them develop and brainstorm. Mm-hmm. It was, here's what I got. Send it to me. I'll think of something and I'll send it back.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get it back and it's like, oh, that's good enough.
Yeah, I just needed your voice.
I just needed to hear something. And that individual said, well, I was going to do this, but I couldn't get into this studio. Or I was going to do that, but I couldn't get to this instrument. Or I couldn't record this way. So I ended up getting a file from here or there, or some library or whatever the situation is. I saved you 40%. You know, it's half of what you were going to spend. Well, that works. And all of a sudden, the quality of the product just plummets.
Full down, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and that's something that's counterproductive to what we're trying to bring back to the table. So we got a game plan. You know what I mean? I know it'll be successful eventually, but there's going to be a reigniting of value and quality. So people have to get back to saying, nah, that's not good enough. You know what I mean? You listen to these YouTube or these TikTok videos or these Facebook reels, and it's got the AI voice basically speaking what you've typed in.
Right.
Which means everybody's video sounds the same.
Yeah.
Where's the creativity at?
But what it does is it puts your brain in this mind state of you become familiar with that voice. That one AI voice that explains the video instead of you explaining it. And then now everybody does it because it's like,
I know the voice.
I know the voice, and this might be funny, or this might be good, or right. this might be.
But don't, you ain't gonna sell a product that way.
No,
you're not gonna stand out that way for
you,
sure.
What you're doing is you're giving those companies like TikTok and Instagram and all of them all the money,
control over your creative process,
and they taking control of you. And only way you're gonna get paid is if you have a lot of people chiming into that.
Right.
And so people trying to get these likes and trying to get these people so they can get this blue check, or they can get this and they can get that, because they think that's what's going to make them famous.
Right.
But that's not always going to make you famous. I mean, it can make you famous, but it ain't going to make you no money.
Right. And if it does, it'll be gone as fast as it came, because the next person with the blue check just takes pole position, and all of a sudden
you're in second place. I remember the one little girl, she was rapping on the videos. And she was sitting in the car, and I think that was her father, used to have her rapping. Mm. And she was real good. And he used to post these videos of her rapping. Mm-hmm. She got a whole Nickelodeon show now.
Yeah, I remember that.
And
yeah.
I'm like, wow, she took that to a whole nother level. Now, those type of people, I understand, they like gifted, and they definitely got it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got it in real life. You know what I'm saying? But then when it comes down to these TikTok videos and you being able to edit the videos and turn them into whatever you want to turn them into and make people believe what you want them to believe, that gets real. That's why I don't really trust
the internet. It's not as easy as it's not as easy as it sounds, or as it might appear, to get to her place.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing is that show was hot for about 8 months.
Yeah.
And then it was just another show.
Yeah, it was just another show.
And you know, I'm sure she'll have her couple of seasons, maybe a few seasons.
Yeah.
And then it'll rerun and she'll get paid the residuals
off of
that.
She'll have to really show her worth. Like, at first it's like
durability.
To see her process was the part that everybody tuned into. Like, I remember when she was just making these videos. Now she's doing this. Mm-hmm. So now it's like, what's she going to do now? And it's like, I don't know what she's going to do.
What can
now.
She do? What is she capable of?
She might be a
dancer? Can she act? Can she, you know?
I mean,
can she write?
I think she's doing good in a little acting for the kids. Anyway, I think she's doing good as an actor.
Well, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But as you get older, that's just like Miley Cyrus. She kind of was this actor on this show,
right?
Basically, giving her real life. Like, I'm this person in real life, but then when I
was
in high school,
Billy Ray Cyrus's daughter.
Too. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So it was that story, but then she kind of made it where I'm gonna make people really love me. So she kind of switched from the genre that she was in and kind of got into the hip hop genre, which made us look at her a little bit differently. Like, oh,
well,
wow.
Yeah, but that's renewing yourself.
So she it was like, all right, she had the show. The show was a success. But what was she going to do in her music career? Because she was really a good singer. And then when she started collabing with black artists, it was like, wow, she's really good. Like,
right.
I think.
Before then, she was just Hannah Montana. Nobody
she was
really.
She Hannah Montana. And her name was being mentioned a lot in rap, too, though.
Right.
But they
Because it rapped. It rhymed.
It was Hannah Montana. First of all, she was a white girl. Mm-hmm. Hannah Montana was a good name. And you can equate white with cocaine or anything. So instead of saying actual cocaine, you can say
Hannah Montana. Yeah.
Stuff like, I keep that white girl Christina Aguilera or something like that, just to say some crazy stuff. And then it just stuck like.
Right.
And people are like, who is Hannah Montana?
And not to mention the fact that her father did a song with Nelly.
And then he did the song. He kind of ventured over to revive his career.
Exactly.
So it was kind of dope to see it.
And Lil Nas X. You know, so, you know, it.
It was
and
dope
again,
to see it.
That's the beauty of the creative process.
Yeah.
But you got to be in the creative process.
You
can't
creative.
Be settling for, you know, catalog. Stationary inventory.
It's all about being different, and you're an artist,
right?
So the whole point is for you to create something different than nobody. T-Pain got a podcast that he do, and he be like, he be so angry on there because he be cussing them out. Like, I've seen that. Future already doing that.
Right.
Such and such already doing that. Show me something different.
Right.
I'm tired of hearing the same people same rappers, same singers doing the same thing that another singer or rapper is doing.
Using the same tracks.
Using the same, same type beats, of sound, the same, same type sound. Of everything.
Everybody's using auto-tune now.
You're good at it, but it's not different. So I'm not going to jump on your track with you because it ain't different.
And that's where creativity, like you said, if you're an artist, the definition of an artist is to create something of art, something of interest.
Something that really, really means something
to you, somebody.
Or to somebody and to inspire somebody to be whatever they want to be.
Right.
But it music nowadays is turning into like basically like a show.
Oh yeah.
I'm doing this. This is what I got.
Right.
I got.
Right.
Everybody got now.
Right. Where's the distinction?
It was cool when Jay was doing it because he was talking about stuff that nobody had.
Right.
And he was lightweight setting trends with the things he was talking about.
Right.
But you talking about I got Christian Dior on. Everybody got on Christian Dior. So what that mean?
What that mean?
That don't mean nothing.
So yeah, we are advocates of the creative process, and we have to kind of buck the system and motivate and encourage individuals to not only be more participatory in the creative process, but to invest in people that are participatory in the creative process. Mm-hmm. So you got to move beyond the artist to the recipient and say, hey, stop settling. Mm-hmm. For good enough. Stop settling for cheap. Stop settling for this is the best that I can do. I mean, you got all these fantastic individuals out here that are creating a better product for you to actually, you know, suppress or submerge yourself in.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about stuff like advertising and commercial sound and even movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay, so we're shooting movies on iPhones now. Great. That don't mean you recorded the audio with the iPhone too, though.
No.
You know, somewhere you gotta make an extra investment.
Yeah, that audio gotta be straight. And that's if you go on Tubi and watch those movies, that you're gonna get shitty audio.
Right.
Because they're
Which
not
is why they're on Tubi and not Amazon.
They're not
Prime.
Investing in that part. They just invested in probably the cameras that they shooting it with. You know what I'm saying? Thinking like, oh, if I get a 4K view of the situation, but you ain't got the mics place where they supposed to be placed, where everybody is being heard the right way.
Exactly.
It still sound like you in the hallway when you in the hallway when it's not supposed to be sounding like that on the movie.
Exactly. Now, am I pitching my product? Not really. I'm in a learning environment now. I am starting to really appreciate the effort and the sacrifices and the work that goes into sound. And I'm starting to realize, because people, and Micah said it, I don't care what movie you've watched. If it had, if you took the five that you identified as the five worst movies that you've ever seen, I bet you four of them have a crappy sound condition, crappy soundtrack, just have crappy audio. But if you look at your top five movies, they probably got fantastic audio, and they're probably just mediocre movies. You know what I mean? In the grand scheme of things, on the public scale, because I think about that. You know, I think about the movies that I think are of the best of all times, but a lot of people don't like them because I pick up something from them. But then I started listening like, oh, yeah, if you think Scarface had a really good soundtrack, it had really good audio for what they were doing. The Godfather, Capote, the Truman Capote movie.
Mm-hmm.
I started thinking about these scores because we're not talking about MP3 tracks. We're talking about big band scores in these movies. And it's like, oh, yeah, I see it now. You know what I mean? So I'm in a learning environment, and I'm really starting to appreciate the process that goes into what we're now doing.
Yeah.
And when we get past the entertainment space and into the professional space, it's just as important, even though the audience isn't as big. You know, there's not as many people watching an Ohio Lottery commercial as there are watching a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's the same interest. Yeah. I mean, need to capture your attention.
If you're watching regular TV, you're going to have to watch it just because you're watching your show and that commercial come on. You watching that 1 minute, 2 minute commercial. And if it's shot by GB Entertainment, nigga. Right. That's a good thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just saying, we out here.
There is a difference. So yeah. I'm learning. I'm enjoying it. You know, I'm always in a student state of mind. So, you know, and I'm in a space that has this capacity. So I better understand, especially if I plan on selling it. So that's where I'm at. You know, but right now there's some work in progress.
Yeah.
There's some modifications being made that should have been done. It's not my fault. It's nobody's fault, actually. Things just kind of happen.
But shout out to
Wild Bill. Everybody know Wild Bill from the Swingers episode.
Yeah,
you know?
Swingers episode. That was a good episode.
He's also a contractor. He mentioned that there, and he's family. So I'm like, hey, I need to get this done. And he's been in there day in and day out trying to make that happen.
He doing it by himself?
Nah, he got some help. Okay. And I've been around to do what I can when I can. But, you know, it's just cool to see, you know, people that really care about you investing in you and kind of making sure this process goes.
I'm glad he's still around. I mean, we've interviewed a lot of people, and a lot of people have been like, oh, I want to be a part of the process. But some of those people probably only want to be a part of the process when it gets to that point.
See, that's...
You don't want to be part of
that. I don't even want to bring that up right now because there's a frustration that I have with that, you know, because I'm understanding of, you know, the things that motivate people to get involved. And I understand that nobody's going to give without getting something in return. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I don't care who you are. I don't care what you're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. There has to be an investment if you expect an outcome.
Yeah.
There has to be. And it has to go beyond your comfort zone, which is why I say you got to be ready to get uncomfortable if you hope to do big things. And that might mean a sacrifice that you weren't prepared to make. Mm-hmm. But if you want to get to that point, you got to make that sacrifice. I can't sacrifice any more than I have through this process.
Yeah.
I don't have that much more to give. You know what I mean? But I've sacrificed enough, and I've sacrificed in a way that when I do get to that point, I'm going to be heavily rewarded.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I ain't even talk. Everybody's captivated by the finances. The finances are a consequence of the effort.
Yeah.
If you make the effort, then the finances are just what happens because the effort is being made.
Right.
So I'm not even thinking about that. I'm sacrificing the finances to get to that point, mm-hmm. but I'm not doing it for the sake of the finances I'm going to get back. I'm doing it for the sake of the relief of actually achieving that space.
Right. And who do you want to be remembered as at the end of the day? You're not going to be remembered as the person who made a whole bunch of money off building a company. You're going to be remembered as the person who built this company, company is striving and it's bringing joy to different types of people of all shapes, colors, sizes, and whatever.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I get it.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because we've been talking about increasing visibility. How do you get people to engage in that process and to just cheer you on and follow along? And, you know, we've been talking about a YouTube channel for a long time, and back to another guest, Truth No Lie, you know, he's killing it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a ton of different venues and platforms that he's getting this exposure on. And I was telling him, like, you know, I'm gonna have to venture into that space sooner than later, especially for some of the elements of the marketing campaign that we're putting out there. And he's like, dude, you've got a whole year of content. I know you're taking pictures. I know you're doing videos. I know you're capturing these things. You're posting them on social media. People want to see the process.
Yeah.
They want to follow the process along. He was like, you should have did your YouTube channel when you first started,
mm-hmm.
because that's the kind of stuff that people are captivated by.
People are more visual now than...
Podcasting
is new. You know what I'm saying? Where it's to the point where people are listening and don't get no visual. So it's a big thing. It's new. It's innovative. It's great. But the visual gives your audience that I get to see you
now. The participation side.
And I want to participate. I see what you're doing. And we tend to engage with our eyes more than our ears. You know what I'm saying?
Which I understand. You know, we got to, seeing is believing, right?
Yeah.
So I get it. You know,
like, and anytime you see an artist make a song and it's real good, you'll listen to that song. But what are you waiting for?
The video. Right.
I'm waiting on the video.
I want to see how this plays out.
How is this? Right. If this song is this dope, I want to see how he going to make a video to this.
Right. And that's essentially what this podcast is. It's it's wetting your whistle for the visual interpretation, but it's not meant to be a video. It's meant to be you showing up and actually getting engaged.
Yeah.
I want you to see it firsthand.
Yeah.
I don't want you to see how it played out. I want you to see how you can be a part of it. So, you know, and that's what I want. But it's not about what I want. It's about what the people want. So, you know, that's kind of where the business is at. And I'm really excited about that because there are so many more factors and so many more resources that are now helping to build that. The visibility that we are building up to is going to surpass anything that I ever thought we were going to be doing.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the writing is already on the wall.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Part of me is manifesting some of this stuff, but a lot of it is already in place. So it's like, oh, I can say it because we're already doing it, because we're already headed that way. So for me to say it now, it's not like cross your fingers and hope it comes true. It's like the first 5 steps of this 20-step process have already been completed.
Already been completed.
I can speak to it now and say, oh, we really are going to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point earlier, where do we go next?
Where's the next step?
Oh, I got a whole lot of next steps.
Because at the end of the day, it's like, all right, say you succeed. That's why I was telling you, like, dude, was, his name's Calvin. Calvin was really all over us. And I was like, dude, only because he likes to see things move forward. He's one of those guys, like, I think he got a thing where he does business consulting and all that stuff, too. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of, it was like, I was like, dang, you kind of like Arthur, dude. Like, literally. Kind of like, and he like 50 some years old, so he's older, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So he's been around, he's a veteran, you know what I'm saying? So it was kind of cool to talk to him and get his perspective on things, but he was also in awe of what we have accomplished so far, though, because of the story that we have and all the things that we're doing. He like, dude, I am in awe, even though he's like, I could have sat there with you guys at this party and kind of was like, y'all young boys don't know what y'all talking about. Like, but he didn't go there. He kind of gave us our flowers and told us what he learned from us. Mm. And at the same time, teaching us other stuff, though.
Right.
So I was like, he's a pretty cool, dope dude.
Right. Right. So anybody wondering, if you noticed or if you pay attention, you know that we have a brother show, the GB7 podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
They did an interview with a couple of guys this week. Just posted today, Wednesday. Obviously, you won't hear this until today, Sunday. But today when we record this is Wednesday, and that
actually,
episode
it's
released.
Thursday.
Oh, it is Thursday. Oh shit! You're right. Sorry, I didn't miss.
We a day off though.
Yeah, hey, I've been busy. So yeah, either way it go, you ain't gonna hear this till Sunday.
Yeah. So yeah,
you but
can,
on Wednesday,
you can go listen
to
that. It's a dope pie. It's about cigars because these are
connoisseurs. Yeah,
connoisseurs of the cigar game, and. It was kind of dope to kind of get into that realm of life and be like he was actually like even down to the pairing of different liquors and wines that you smoke with a cigar. Like it got into real deep into that. So it was pretty dope. But those are two pretty dope guys to kind of get down here, you know, Dave. And it was real crazy because Dave was kind of the one interacting, you know, how he usually sit in the background and let everybody else interact. He was the interactor
the
this time. Like, and I was like, Dave, if you do that all the time, you probably would be way farther than you would be in your podcast.
You know, it's so funny because, you know, we started this process. Dave started this whole concept.
Yeah, he started everything,
right. So I participated in this concept because I brought a different, more professional element
to it,
the family business, if you want to call it that at this point. You know, but it's funny how things have kind of morphed. You know, Dave's show is starting to become a lot more engaging and mature than it was. And I don't know what's driving that, but I listen to the people that he interviewed. And, you know, obviously he has his goofballs on there.
Right.
You know, his friends or his,
anybody
know,
who
whatever.
Just
yeah, just randoms. Right. But he has some really, like, intricate conversations with people who, if you listen to Dave, especially in those earlier episodes, you wouldn't think the people he talked to on these podcasts would ever give him the time of day.
Ever.
But it's like, that was a really interesting person that you just interviewed.
Well, I used to say that to him all right. the time. Like, dude, how do you know these people? Because you're not him.
Right. You don't run in that circle.
That's not, this is birds of a feather flock together.
Right.
You are definitely not those birds.
You're the turtle. You're not even
how
a bird.
How the hell do you know this guy? Right. And how are they so interesting and so well put out to the point? Like, even Amir was a great interview, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he was so interesting, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
T. Bush, just so interesting.
Right.
Will from the bar, Prosperity. Yeah. It's so interesting. These are people that is truly his friend, like, would give him the shirt off his back, off their back type people. And I'm like, dude, you know these people, but you don't kind of, like, interact with them, like, in real life, like, everyday life.
They haven't become resources in his development.
Right.
They are just people within his
wide
circle of resources. Because
Dave
or contacts.
He's a worker bee. Once you get around Dave,
mm-hmm.
it's like he's gonna give you that conversation that you thought you wasn't gonna get from
exactly.
him. You know what I'm saying? He's going to listen to your conversation and take in all the information that you gave him.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So all that stuff plays a part into somebody really clinging to you. Like,
right.
I like this guy.
Right.
I can talk to him and really get feedback that's worth something.
Which is what makes our dynamic so, you know, interesting, because people look at me and see this professional, you know, hard cut, straight nose businessman.
Yeah.
But then they like, well, what you doing on 116th of Miles?
Yeah.
Like, why would you even be over there? Who do you know in Garden Valley? Why would you even be over there? You know, why you spend time with prisoners
total opposite.
Well, I mean, because it's not about how we present that really dictates how we got to the point of being that presentation.
Yeah.
Dave and I essentially grew up in the same communities, in the same environments. He just doubled down on where he was, and I doubled down on where I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
But we still came from where we came from.
Came from what you came
and
from.
And we still are who we are. And Dave was surrounded by people of character and intelligence and intention, and he had to absorb that. He had to utilize it in a way that kept him from becoming what everybody around him was being. And in the same sense, because of the core that I was developed from, I couldn't allow myself to become a part of everybody I was around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some really interesting, unfortunate elements of that business society that I could never amount to.
Mm.
But people would look at me and go, well, I see who you know. I know who you know. I know who you hang with. You got it. Birds of a feather flock together, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that don't make me one of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That don't make their characters my influences because I still know where I came from.
Yeah.
I still know what I'm capable of, and I still believe what I believe, and that's not going to change just because of who I'm surrounded by. And Dave is kind of saying the same thing. Dave could literally be in the belly of the beast, you know what I mean, and be 100% comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But that don't mean he's eating from the same pot that they're eating from.
Calvin said it because, you know, he had a security. He said when Dave walked into that bar,
mm-hmm.
he sized him up instantly. He's like, because his pants were sagging.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He came in there and he was like, oh, I'm going to have a problem with him. I'm going to have to, you know what I'm saying? Like, he just felt like that.
Right.
Until he had a conversation with him. And
right.
then all of a sudden, we buddy-buddy the whole time.
Right.
And he told us. He was like, dude, I had you sized up already. He ain't had me sized up because I came in there kind of on my shit. But Dave, he said, I had you sized up from the moment. But he was like, but when you came around me, you demanded this king presence. Because when he came around him, me and Dave walked up on him and he was on his phone.
Mm.
He instantly got off the phone and Dave was like, you ain't got to get off your phone. And he was like, nah, what you need? You know what I'm saying? He asked him about the little Buffalo Trace thing. And he
mm-hmm.
was like, oh, I ain't going to be able to give it to you. Da, da, da. But at the end of the day, he was like, I had to respect. I felt like this respect had to be had. Either we was going to go to war or I was going to just
share a plate. Right.
Share a plate with you. And it ended up being sharing.
Right.
But I had to just give you that because you present yourself like that when you walk around people. And they was like, I never felt like I got like that. And then even Monica's friend said that, Byron, he said the same thing. He was like, I didn't know how to perceive you at first. But then when we had that conversation, I felt like they basically the same person. They introverts, you know what I'm saying? So they end up clabbing on that. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, y'all all the same people.
And, you know, there's a lesson in that for both parties. Dave needs to be more conscious of who he's capable of being, regardless of who he's perceived as being. You know, he has an ability to touch people in ways that they never expected from him. Yeah. And I could say that because I've been through it with him. I've seen him do it for other people, and I'm constantly finding myself in that same space where people are going, I never would have appreciated you in this capacity
if it wasn't for this. All the time, dude. Even I see it because I've been around Dave lately a lot. So even when we went to the Cavs game one time, and me, him, and DG, and we all at the Cavs game. Now, it's a million people in there. You know it. And we in the standing room only area. So we just watching the game. But out of everybody that was in that space, these two little white girls walk up to David Wallace and show their interest in David Wallace. And I'm like, he was the bum. Like, he didn't even have on nothing that was, I had the drip on that day. We at the Cavs game.
Right.
They look at David Wallace and say, oh, my girl want to talk to you. Da, da, da. Now, mind you, he handled it right because, I mean, they were young girls. So he was like, I gave him the conversation, whatever, whatever. But at the end of the day, it was like, how did you get that to happen?
Right.
It's your aura, dude. You weren't even talking to nobody. You were just standing there.
Right. And that's something that we need to harness.
Yeah.
We need to harness that as a community, and we need to put that into action when we're trying to become better versions of ourselves. You know, Dave is, he plays this podcasting thing as if it's, you know, kind of an extracurricular activity. He loves it.
He loves to do it, but it's...
But it's an extracurricular activity.
It's my passion product. Right. I just like to do it.
But it's something that he can really shine at if he allows himself to invest in it beyond.
I just say, I told him the only missing piece that you're missing is socialism. Being social with people.
Social interaction,
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you were more social with people, this podcast would go way further.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to be the head of the podcast, but be behind the scenes and don't talk to nobody.
Right.
And that's not going to get you listeners. That's just going to get people be like, I don't know. People just going to look at you and be like, you got a podcast. You think you better than everybody.
Right, because you're so standoffish.
But you don't talk to us. You don't say nothing to us.
And, you know, that kind of goes back to, you know, understanding your product and the coaching side of it and really having a plan built around your product.
Yeah.
And, you know, for him, his product, whether he wants to acknowledge it or not, is his podcast.
Yeah.
It is his voice. It is his character. It is his aura.
That's the content.
That's something that is attractive to people, that people will be willing to invest in and their time and their resources into, but you got to market it properly.
You know what I mean?
So as much as I've tried to encourage Dave to really build a game plan around his content and around his personality, to him, that's not what I'm really doing. So that'll change. I know that'll change because he's going to start to see people with less to offer than him become successful with that little bit that they have.
Yeah.
And then I'll be able to go back to him and say, I told you, you know, if you had just applied yourself this much, you know, in comparison to what you've done, you'd have been two steps ahead of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think he's realizing it more and more as we keep doing this thing.
Yeah.
At one point in time, he didn't think we was a platform. And then all of a sudden, he like, we a platform. And now he just texted just yesterday, like, no, actually today, he was like, guys, I think we really are a platform. I think we really got it. And I'm like, dude, we always had it. It's just that you're not putting in that background work that you need to put in.
There's a confidence piece to it, but there's a humility to it as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And what I think Dave has always been very conscious of is I don't want to get a big head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't want people to think I have a big head because I have this.
He's so busy trying to get everybody around him to be the foresight of everything and let him be like this little person that's like, I put this together, but
yeah, doing the work, right?
Everybody else is. We his little minions. I call them my minions, by the way. Them is my minions. All my podcast members is my minions, but they like, nah, if you look at it in the real way, y'all doing all the work and I'm sitting here chilling. I said, you right. You might do got some minions.
But, you know, and the reason I'm bringing this up, because he is an example of something that is overlooked and underappreciated.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that out there. There's a lot of people that are engaged in the process but are still overlooked and undervalued.
Yeah.
But there's a game plan. There's a way to bring that notoriety where it needs to be. And it's not always about monetization. Some people could care less. I just want to be out there. I want people to hear what I got to say.
I care less about... I make my money how I make my money. As long as I can live where I'm living, I'm straight. But when I have something that I invest into myself, it ain't even about, like, with this audio engineering, it ain't really about money with me. I used to say that all the time, like, I ain't making no money. But at the end of the day, I started realizing, like, dude, it ain't about money. It's about what you want to do,
right?
Who you want to be. How do you want to be the best at this or not? You might not get paid for a few years before you actually become the best. And then all of a sudden, everybody throwing fucking $1 million at you just because. It's just how things work.
It's the way it develops.
Yeah, but you got to stay true to yourself and stay down with the cause of what you're trying to do.
And I just posted something about that earlier today. I can't remember who it was in the video, but it's like, if the only thing you're focused on is the destination, then you miss the part that makes the difference, which is the journey.
The journey is the best part.
The destination should never really exist. There should never be a destination.
It should be
if you're truly driven to do more, then you'll never stop moving.
Never.
The destination will never exist.
No.
The only place you know you're going to end up at is in a casket.
It's in a casket.
Or in a urn. You know those two things are coming. So that's the ultimate destination.
Mm-hmm.
So the journey is everything you do between now and that final end.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really want to put a pause in there because, I just wanted to retire, or I just wanted to make $1 million, or I just wanted to get this car, or I just wanted to have two children, or I just wanted to, you know what I mean? Okay, so you're there. Now what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You don't want to settle. I've never been a settler. Everything that I've ever did in my life, I've always thought about it like, all right, I got to this point, what's next?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I got to this point, what's next? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, and that's how I think. But a lot of my friends don't think like that. They think like, I'm at this point and I'm stagnant and I'm just going to be here.
Until I figure something new out, right?
Even if they ain't trying to figure out nothing new out, it's just like, this is my life. This is what I want to do in my life. This is how my life is going. And I try to tell my friends, like, don't think like that. And it's hard to tell your friends who have children that notion, because they're like, dude, you ain't got no kids, so you can really just keep doing whatever. No, anybody can do whatever they want to do. You ain't, just because you got kids don't mean that slows you down.
Man, there's 70, 80-year-olds out here in college.
Still.
You know, just because they wanted to take their life in a different direction. No, I did this, I did that, I retired, now I want to get into politics, or I want to get into this, I want to get
into
that.
When I was in college, it was this dude, he was like 42 years old. Mm-hmm. And he was a freshman. And when I was a sophomore, he was a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and he's staying in the dorms and everything. And I'm like, this dude is old as dirt. But he in here learning whatever. He probably got his doctorate or something. I don't even know what he's doing now. Right. But I know he was like the oldest dude on campus,
right,
participating in all the kids stuff that we doing. And I'm sitting here like, oh yeah, he just living his best life.
But that was a jewel in that dorm. You know what I mean? That was the old man on the hill that could have taught y'all lessons that y'all never would have heard.
I mean, he was a cool dude. I don't think I ever have a conversation with him, though.
Yeah.
Like, I just knew him because everybody knew he was the oldest guy on campus. Like,
yeah.
Still old.
Well, I just wanted to spend a minute, you know, kind of talking about, you know, the capacity of what we're doing and, you know, the direction that we're moving in. And yes, you know, there's been a lot of social commentary, a lot of, you know, relaxation, a lot of entertainment premise in some of the later episodes of the podcast. Not as much about Links Not Chains, not as much about the concepts of the business. And ultimately, for me, I've said it 100 times, this is free advertising for the rest of my businesses. Yeah. That's why I started this process. I didn't do it to be entertaining. I did it to be informative about what I was trying to
and to let people establish into your life.
And to let people into my professional life.
Not my your personal, life.
Yeah, my personal life ain't that, that public.
Yeah, but I mean, just to let people in, I'm real transparent, so I kind of talk about me and Tia all the time.
Yeah.
Because it's just me and her. You know what I'm saying? So that's all I got to talk about. I ain't got no
kids. I mean,
kids.
Don't get me wrong. Anybody that pays attention knows enough about me to have an understanding of who I am.
We know who Arthur is, the guy that you want to know. I'm telling y'all.
So, but before we get out of here, I would be irresponsible if I didn't bring up maybe one of the most interesting things that's ever happened in American history.
What's that?
The president of the United States had his private home raided by the FBI.
Oh, yes.
You cannot, that can't happen. And a guy like me, not even make a reference to it.
Come on, now, that can't happen. You gotta talk about that, yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of, and I don't want to get on the political side of it. That conversation will happen because it's going to have to happen at some point. Because, you know, like I said a little bit ago, I know people on both sides of the spectrum. There's a lot of people that see me and see who I know and who I hang around and just assume that I am one thing or the other. Yeah. The fact of the matter is, I know plenty of Trump supporters.
Mm-hmm.
I know plenty of Obama supporters. I know plenty of Democrats. I know plenty of Republicans. But I don't align myself with anybody just because of their political affiliation.
Yeah, that's just one thing about them.
That's just one thing about them that makes them who they are. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't draw me to them, and it doesn't push me away from them.
Right.
But, you know, there's this political firestorm that's been happening in this country since Obama got elected. And it was amplified when Trump got elected.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically blown to smithereens on January 6th.
Yeah.
Because all of the things that we have suppressed as a nation became surface written or surface visible when Obama became president. And the wool was pulled back when Trump became president.
Mm-hmm.
And a floodlight was shined on it on January 6th.
Yeah.
But there's so many people that want to pretend like the things that happened didn't happen. Yeah. And that's my frustration with this whole process. You know what I mean? There were things that were never supposed to be done that took place. And it took place for the sake of something that was never really supposed to even be up for conversation. Like,
right.
Pretending like an election didn't happen. I don't care what your party affiliation is. If you genuinely believe in this nation and what it represents and what it stands for, then you can't ignore the fact that somebody is trying to dismantle that for their own personal gain.
Okay, exactly.
And they're literally using you to support that mission to the point where you stormed the capital of the build of the country that you claim to represent. On January 5th, Blue Lives Matter. On January 6th, you were throwing trash cans at police officers and stabbing them with flags.
Yeah.
Something about, all because he said, go do it.
Yeah.
All because he convinced you that if this goes according to plan, everything you think you know is going to fall apart. And since it's happened, he has been exposed for all of the faults of his presidency. But he's kept this momentum going. Don't believe nothing that you see. Don't believe nothing you hear. They're just trying to single me out. This person is bad. That person is bad. Emails and this and that and everything else is the problem, except the person who is now basically under fire from his own people.
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't buy into it. We still don't acknowledge it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And he was never the right person for the job. It's so amazing to me when I listen to people who basically talk about how great he is or how mistreated he's been since he's been in office, or how everybody is lying on him. Everybody is trying to paint a picture of him being something that he's not. He's significantly better than we give him credit for. And those same people, when he was running against, you know, the rest of the Republican Party in, what was it, 2008 mm-hmm. or 2012 or 16, those same people were saying, you got to be kidding me if you elect this guy president.
Yeah.
He is the worst of the worst. He is this. He is that. Even the people that he ran against, the January 6th insurgents or whatever you want to call it, the people that stormed the Capitol, they stormed the Capitol because he told them that they were trying to steal, the government was trying to steal the election, and Mike Pence was the person that was supposed to stop it from happening. And if he doesn't do it, I'm going to be very disappointed with this guy, and you mm-hmm. should be too. To the point where they literally had to, they cornered him in a basement of the Capitol building with a noose and signs that said, kill Mike Pence. And all of a sudden, he's now defending Trump because that's what's good for the party.
And it's all politics. I don't, it's weird. The whole thing, I think, I always said that Trump was going down, regardless of what, he's going to be the first president to go down, and they're going to take his ass down. If they didn't assassinate him, he's going down. I actually, on the last episode, our question of the day was, if you can pick any president to be the next president, who would it be?
Any person
to be the president, who would it be? Uh-huh. And Dave said he would go with Bernie. And my answer was really, I came up with this answer because it was, I feel like, I don't like Trump as a person. I don't like him as a period. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, since he think he knows what he's doing, he's starting this fake war that we're going through right now with all this
internally
stuff.
Right.
Yeah. I said I would put him back in there to let him finish his job. Because, dude, you only got 4 more years. If you mess up them other 4 years, you're definitely going to jail. Or you're going to get assassinated. So I just was like, I just want to see. He feel like he was doing such a great job. I want to see what he would have did in another 4. So I just said, all right, I'll make Trump the president again, just because.
Wow.
To see what will happen. But I mean, I'm not a Trump supporter. I'm far away
from it. I get it. No, I get it.
It was just like, when somebody starts something and then you put somebody else in a position to try to fix everything that he did, I feel like Trump had a mission and he was trying to accomplish it. Put aside the racial thing that he brung out to the open and pulled that back. But everything that he was doing besides that, I feel like he had a mission and he was trying to accomplish it. He did have some relationships with other countries that we couldn't even get in those relationships with, but he could. You know what I'm saying? So it was kind of weird. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was having these relationships with enemies.
Well, there's a reason for that, but I hear you.
But, and I was like, well, maybe those relationships could have turned into something else, because now those relationships we had, that he had with those people, we're kind of like, no, we ain't got that relationship no more. Now that we got a new president, no, we ain't got that relationship no more. That was Trump messing with y'all.
Well, and that's why his house got raided. When it's all said and done, his house got raided because of documents and files that he was hiding. It had nothing to do with January 6th.
Yeah.
Nothing whatsoever. There is conversations that were hidden. There are meetings that we didn't know about. There were literally state-level sessions and conferences and meetings that he was having where there were no actual reporters, there were no actual U.S. state service people in the room. We don't know what he disclosed to these people. We don't know the nature of the conversations that took place after that.
That is a security breach.
Which is, you can't get any higher than that.
Yeah.
How do you have a closed door discussion with Russia's consulate and Russia's diplomats with no American presence, yet the Russian state TV is in the room? Mm. So how is their news in there and ours is not? Mm. What are you saying to them that we are not even supposed to know?
Right.
You can't do that. As the president of the United States, Your job is to protect our interests at all costs, not to support theirs. Mm-hmm. So for all we know, he talked, because we'll never see the news clips that were shown in Russia
right.
in relation to that conversation. And we don't necessarily have to, because it may not even have been news conversations. It may have just been gossip
yeah.
or state secrets. He had a, you know, he had, so this is the thing. It's like, okay, we ask you to give us all of this documentation that we know exists, because there's certain things that, as the president of the United States, you can't not allow to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we know those things happen. So we asked you for that documentation when you first left office. You never gave it to us. We had to come to you, and we got essentially 15 of the 30 boxes we were entitled to. So when we asked you and asked you and asked you for the last year to give us the rest of it, you said, no, we just broke, we raided the house and took it.
Mm.
And he said all the stuff wasn't there. It was there. They got it.
Mm.
Some of it was in his personal safe, because he said, it went in my personal safe. Well, we don't know what you're hiding in there.
Yeah.
But we know what we're entitled to, and we know some of the stuff is here and some of it is somewhere else. And now they got proof that they were burning stuff up to try to get rid of it.
Mm.
Well, when that was Nixon, he got impeached. He got kicked out of office.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But when the people that are that are meant to hold you accountable for that activity put up barriers to that, responsibility,
mm-hmm.
then the entire system is shot. The entire system. And when everybody on that side of the fence is saying that everybody on the other side of the fence is on a witch hunt because they're trying to find something that doesn't exist, well, if it doesn't exist, then they don't have to try to find it. Right. All you have to do is say it's not there. Mm. They're not saying it's not there. They're saying you can't have it.
Mm.
It's a big difference.
Yeah. Big difference.
Big difference between what you're asking for doesn't exist and you're not entitled to what you're asking for. Well, I am entitled. The Constitution says that it's my information.
Yeah.
The Library of Congress owns that information.
Yeah.
It's not yours anymore. You're not the president anymore.
It's over with for you.
And you don't have the right to destroy it. So we're coming to get it. That's the premise of this raid, but let them tell it. The Democrats are on a witch hunt.
Yeah.
So that's what my frustration, and we know that. And if we don't know that, if we're not educated enough to know the reality of the situation, then stop pretending like you are. Don't mm-hmm. repeat what you hear on Fox News or on OAN TV or whatever news source you're listening to. They're telling you what they want you to hear. They're not telling you what you're supposed to know.
Supposed to know. This is the consequence of putting somebody in office who was not military connected or had anything to do with the way that the Constitution has been ran for this country all these years. And you put somebody random in that position, a businessman at that, he's going to run it like a business.
There's the problem right there. This is the consequence of running the largest nation in the world as a business.
As a business.
It's been a business since the 80s. It was never a business to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
We monetize certain elements of our nation. And as a result, somebody who knew how to manage business at that or money at that level needed to be in charge.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, all we did was lost the concept of what the United States was about. It was about the people.
People.
Not the businesses.
We the people.
And we literally turned businesses to people. Essentially, we gave businesses the same protections as individuals so that businesses can now be a part of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. If you look at the trends of the U.S. over the course of the last 100 years, we had gradual increases, gradual decreases, gradual increases, gradual decreases. But it wasn't until the Citizens United decision that we saw the sharpest decline in the way we actually operated as a nation.
Mm.
And this is just the end result of that. You cannot turn organizations into individuals so that they can play in our field.
Yeah.
Because what you end up getting out of that is instability for the sake of the business at the destruction of the individual.
Yeah.
And here we are. So we're not going to get too deep into that. It's something that I think it's something that as a society, we have to pay closer attention to.
Yeah.
Because there is going to be a consequence to this. This has literally never happened in the history of this nation.
Yeah.
But the whole world is watching how we handle, how we hold our leaders accountable, because our leaders dictate policies in their nations. And if we're not going to hold them accountable, and if we're going to bow down to what the people in charge want, then don't bring your shit over here. Mm. If you can't take care of your own country, we don't want to hear nothing about what you think is good or bad.
Over here, right?
Thank you, but no thank you. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, our allies are gone, and we lose our leverage as a nation of support and peace and growth and optimism, and we end up on the island by ourselves. And that's about the worst thing we can be.
We don't want to be that.
Sure, no. So I just wanted to throw that out there just to ruffle some feathers. I know I got a lot of people listening. Like, this guy, you know. But hey,
it's a conversation.
Step away from your political affiliation long enough to pay attention to what's actually happening. Stop listening to the rhetoric. Stop listening to the explanations, and pay attention to the actual activities. Read the rules. See what's happening. Tell me, do you really feel the same way? Mm-hmm. And if you do, maybe we just in two different worlds right now. So I appreciate you letting me back in the basement, bro.
Oh, no. You know, this is your home like it's mine. Mi casa, su casa.
Mi casa, su casa. I appreciate that. And I appreciate everybody for listening in. Stay tuned, because there's a lot coming. This is AG's Convos. And we out.
AG's Convos. We gonna show you how the world goes. AG's Convos. We gonna show you how the world goes.